Oh my goodness. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football playoff fans across the nation and around the world. We're hearing you. We're seeing you. It's the Tim May Show once again with my trusty co-pilot, who I let fly most of the time. That's how much I trust him, Matt Wilhelm. Matt Wilhelm, got four other little guests on this show coming up. Insert guests. I mean, Bill Bender from the Sporting News, Ross Bjork, the athletic director at Ohio State. Right now, G. Scott Sr., who's been on here several times this year, putting it in layman's terms, what this really means for this, for him, the families, and the kids who won a national championship, and Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, who picked Ohio State to win in a rather right out there, straightforward column before the playoffs started. But man, nothing starts before you and I get this airplane started. This great flight we've been on all season. We've had some dips, you know, some rough air, some turbulence, but we got through it. And who better than you, Matt Wilhelm, gatekeeper of the exclusive national championship team members club at Ohio State? Who better than you to welcome the latest new members to the National Championship Club at The Ohio State University?
Yeah, it's an exciting time, and I think I appreciate you giving me those keys to the gate to allow these gentlemen in. But again, a lot of ups and downs, and I think even over the course of these the 4 years, and I'm going to really just kind of, you know, talk about those seniors and a lot of those guys that came back, the ups and downs, and in some cases, the ups were predicted to be ups, and the downs were the probably unexpected downs for a lot of these guys as four-star, five-stars coming in a very, very highly touted recruiting class. They expected things to not always be easy, but they expected to beat that team up north almost every year and to win a Big Ten championship almost every year and to win maybe even multiple national championships. But that being said, these guys got it done. I think I am so happy as a former Buckeye. I'm so happy for these seniors. I think even slightly more so happy for Coach Day and his family, because talk about a bumpy road. I know you win 70 and you lose 10 and you think, wow, 85.7% winning percentage. What an amazing journey. But it's those 10 that get held over his head. And, you know, those last four, in some cases, that have been held over his head in very, very harsh wear. It's just very satisfying. And I think, you know, Jack Sawyer and JTT and Ty Leak and Denzel and, you know, I guess Will Howard and just these, you know, Travion. Emeka Ebuka. They came to Ohio State with aspirations of accomplishing a lot. They hadn't up to this point. And so for them, it's extremely satisfying to get this win. And I think, and I think about this all the time, and I know that you're going to have this one little cutaway, you know, clip with Ross Bjork, and I'll put, you know, Will Howard and Seth McLaughlin and even Caleb Downs and Quinshon Judkins, you know, in the same box. Is Ross Bjork's got to feel like, you know, it's easy to win a national championship because, the day he shows up on the job, you know, or the year he shows up on the job, it's like, bang, national championship. And I always just think that, you know, not to be long-winded, but in the NFL, it's like, man, all I want to do is go to a Super Bowl. I just want to play in one,
yeah,
whether I win or lose. And then you have these rookies that, or a first-year coach that leads the team all the way, and it's like, and they get a ring, and you're like, man, I've been doing this for 7 years, and I've never sniffed a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And then you walk in and get a ring. So it's just very satisfying for Buckeye Nation. I think that's the I mean, in some cases, I'm at a loss for words because of what this means. And I think that anyone that considers an asterisk, you know, by this football team and by this victory because of what they didn't do against that team up north and what they didn't do in the Big Ten championship is not fully committed, you know, with their heart and their mind to Buckeye Nation on being a real Ohio State football fan.
Yeah. And anybody that puts an asterisk by this, I understand, you know, how much the Michigan game means. I've been covering Ohio State football for 41 seasons. Are you kidding me? But the bottom line is you got to feel like, okay, this team didn't get everything you wanted them to get, but then they had to go the hard way to get the national championship. They had to win an unprecedented four games in the postseason to win a national championship. I mean, the first, 1968, 2002, team you were on, you only had to win one game. I mean, you had to win your
Correct.
way into being eligible to be one of the two teams that people consider for the national championship. But you had to win one game. Imagine four games of that magnitude. And these games, this was a gauntlet this team ran. I mean,
It
this
was,
was,
it
yeah,
was.
there was no first round, play-in game, team out of Dayton that you had to eviscerate in the opening round. You had to play Tennessee, the third best team in the Southeastern Conference. Then you had to beat the Big Ten champion, and then
Yep.
you had to beat Texas, the maybe a lot of people thought as good a team as Georgia. I mean, you got beat by Georgia in overtime in the SEC championship game, and then you had to beat Notre Dame. The sweetheart, the Cinderella of the whole tournament, and you got it done. So there is no apologies, I don't think, needed by this team at all.
No.
Within themselves, they know they don't have a pair of gold pants. I mean, how often are you going to rub that in on them? I'm talking about fans, about their lack of that in their wardrobe chest. But I know that, Matt, you welcome them with open arms to this exclusive club that are national championship team members at Ohio State.
Absolutely. And I think the most satisfying graphic that's making its way around social media is all the red lines through the AP, through the AP top 10 of the teams that Ohio State beat to earn this national championship. That's one note that I want to make. The other note is, frankly, is being 22 years removed now from the 2002 national championship team. Not a lot of people ask me to see my gold pants, but a lot of people ask me to see my national championship ring. So to put that in perspective, what matters and what don't. And I'm not trying to say that one doesn't matter and one does, or one's more than the other, but my gold pants are where my gold pants are, and my rings are the thing that everybody wants to ask, where they're at. Can I see it? Can I, do you wear it? Do you whatever? Like, they don't ever ask, where my gold pants are dangling at.
Yeah, exactly. Dangling at. That's a good way of putting it. But the bottom line is, what does it do for a player? You've experienced it. We've talked about that several times on this show. What it does for a player from the standpoint of, and Ryan Day's talked about it, since the victory. You get to go to the Woody Hayes and give a guided tour, and hey, you see that team right over there that says 2002 national champion. They keep saying 2025, but it's really 2024, 2025, just like
Correct.
y'all's bowl game was played in
2003.
2003. But the bottom line is, it gives you cachet. I mean, it gets you into the, for want of another term, the building for free, right? With
You're
all
absolutely
your
right. I
family.
mean, for sure. I mean, the number of times, and again, it's not like it's 50 times, but when folks get inside the Woody, I get a picture next to my All-American,
Yeah.
picture up on the wall, or a picture down at the horseshoe next to my All-American Buckeye tree, or it's a picture of the 2002 National Championship ring or trophy.
Yeah.
And that's an exclusive company, that you're joining at one of the most historical, winningest, not winningest, winning football programs in all of college football. And so for these guys to have this, and again, I was as critical as anybody leading up to this point that had this team not won the national championship in a decade from now, it's an extremely forgettable football season, football team, football recruiting class. Why? They have a bunch of victories, but not the victories that make you legends, in the lore of Ohio State football.
Yeah, sorry, I had to lean back. I got goosebumps when you said that because it's accurate as hell.
Yes.
And I think they understood that. Just think, this team could have been 13-3, right? And who would have cared?
Nobody, right,
Instead, they're
100%.
14-2, and everybody cares. Who knows what monument's going to be built to the memory of Ryan Day and the coaching job he and his staff did after that loss to Michigan. As I told him, in my opinion, it's the best coaching job I've ever seen done at Ohio State over that kind of period. But to resurrect a team that almost everyone had given up on and take them to the national championship and to
Well,
play with the at the level that team played at. Go ahead.
and one other point that I want to make is, no, your apps, everything you just said was accurate, but one thing that popped into my head too was this is the culmination of multiple years of not being good enough to get to where we're at to be able to put the ring on your finger and raise that trophy. And what do I mean? That means the firing of a former defensive coordinator and the hiring of Jim Knowles.
Yes.
Identifying that your defense is not good enough at a championship level for the Ohio State standard. Let's go get our guy. We went, got our guy, and we delivered a top 10 performance in every defensive category known to man this football season in a national championship winning season. Our offensive coordinator, whomever that might have been, not good enough. I go get my old buddy who I used to work for, Chip Kelly, to come in to bring the innovation, to maximize the skill. Also, it takes a humble head football coach to go, I'm going to rescind control of calling these plays and give it to someone else that I trust to drive my offensive car while I sit back and lead, while I sit back and motivate, while I sit back and interject discipline into this football team and fight and maybe, use my time other places because I trust this man to do right with my toys on offense. And I think that's what encapsulate what Ryan Day has done, not just from Michigan forward, right? Which is what
Yes.
everybody's going to talk about. I'm going to talk about go back 3 years, identifying not good enough, Jim Knowles, identifying not good enough, Chip Kelly, identifying maybe I'm not the right guy to lead men and also call plays. I'm going to give that to someone else.
Yeah.
I mean, we see it in the NFL on a weekly basis, these control freaks that have their play cards and they just, their fingerprints are almost, chewing their way through a laminated piece of paper because they
Yep.
just can't give it up. And that's what Ryan Day did. And you look at the result,
Yeah.
championship.
Yeah. And he and like you like you're saying without saying it, being a head coach in college football now is so much more than that. It's so much more than discipline. And you're at the head of like a transfer portal, you're at the head of the NIL scheme,
Fundraising.
all fundraising, all these kind of things that if it that no way they don't distract from your ability to do what we were just talking about. And why not bring in a guy like Chip Kelly, one of the most recognized
Innovator, offensive
innovators
innovators.
in college football, and Jim Knowles, who even changed his own way of doing things, but showed his genius, if that's the right term, about being able to meld his system with the talent he had on hand. And now he's much in demand, as we all know. Hey, we're going to take a little break from you and I talking, and we're going to run in order maybe this group of experts in their own realm, one way or the other. Probably starting out with G. Scott Sr., who's one of my favorite people in the world now, and he knows that. The father of G. Scott Jr. is kind of giving us the pulse of this team, even though he lives in Seattle. Talks to his son probably every day. His son was in the middle of the heart and soul of this football team, the spiritual aspect of this team, which played so huge. If you make fun of it, folks, make fun of it. But it was huge with this football team. But we're going to have G. Scott Sr. on, and in rapid succession, you're going to be following that with me walking off the field with Ross Bjork. Already posted this on Twitter, but I want to have it again in my Tim May show so you can see just the conversation we had of why he stuck. Why during the heat of it all, after that Michigan loss, he said emphatically that in fact Ryan Day was his head football coach. We're gonna have Dennis Dodd, who, like I said, picked Ohio State, and he did have to pick Ohio State, but he did. He had Texas on his mind to begin with, but then changed his mind about that before the playoffs started and went with Ohio State. And then finally, Bill Bender, who not only is a national football correspondent for the Sporting News, happens to live in Ohio State Talent Central, Pickerington. Think of all the players from Pickerington, what, five on this team? Kind of crazy. But just Bill Bender's point of view before Matt Wilhelm and I come back and probably talk another 14 or 15 hours about this remarkable run to a national championship. Without further ado, let's have my little lineup of experts.
Dennis Dodd, you're one of my good friends in this business. And after the Michigan game, in between the Michigan game and the game with Tennessee, You know, you work for CBSSports.com. You're one of the more respected voices, whatever you call it, typists in the business. You picked Ohio State to make the run and win it all. Did you feel you were going out on a limb there? What just told you this was it?
You know, that's a great question. You know, I was at the Michigan game. I think before the thing started, I still thought they had the best roster. They had the best talent. If you looked at it, I had Texas. I had Texas picked, and something told me that they had cleared the cobwebs. I don't know what it was. They were going to get Tennessee first. It looked like a good matchup for them in cold weather. And I said, well, if they beat Tennessee, then they've got a shot here. Yeah. To go on neutral fields and beat these teams. And then after Tennessee, it was like a mental hurdle. I talked to Denzel Burke about it after the game. He called it that. Like, we got over that. We thought we could do it. So things fell into place. And then on the other side, I picked Notre Dame to get there as well. I thought they were the sum of their parts. And we saw how they got here. And even last night, I still can't figure out how they went from 31-7 to 31-23 and knocking at the door to tie.
Yeah.
Until that long pass to Jeremiah. But I tell people at the end of the day, it's kind of like that and a Panera gift card won't get you much. But yeah. if I get compensated for that in the phase, great. But yeah. It'll go on the somewhere below on the tombstone, I guess.
Yeah, but maybe you need to move to Vegas and put your put your hunches into action. Wanted to ask you this. This Ohio State football team, what jumps out at you now that you've watched them run this gauntlet? You watched them in despair after Michigan, yeah. But you watched them run this gauntlet. What stands out most about this particular team?
There was a moment after, and maybe even you were out of the room after the Michigan game, because I got there late. I was covering Michigan that
day. Of course,
yeah. I wrote about that. And I asked Will Howard, how far down on the list today is the fact that you guys can make a run in the playoff, or you're going to the playoff and you got a chance to win it all? And he said something like last. And he said way down the list.
Yeah.
That was the
That's
moment.
Right.
That was the moment. You know, that Ryan Day did something, or that coaching staff did something to turn around, and we've all talked about the team meeting. I think those are cliches sometimes, but they keep referencing it, and something changed. Where it's like, in this new world, hate to say it, you don't have to beat Michigan. You don't have to even play for your conference championship. 7 of the 12 teams now, every year at large, don't win their conference championship. So this is going to happen more than it ever has. This is the fourth time in 27 years, I think, since the BCS started, that a non-conference champion has won it. So get used to it.
Yeah.
That was communicated, I think.
Yeah.
We'd like to win the Big Ten. We didn't beat Michigan, but we're alive, and we've got a shot.
Yeah. How good was this Ohio State team in the end? I mean, you've seen a slew. Is a slew the right term? What, 30, 25, 30 national champions, maybe more than that? You're still a young man.
That's right.
But how good was this team in the end, in your opinion, when you watched them play?
I think, look, bottom line, they fulfilled the investment. We can talk about $20 million. And if they don't win this thing, that's all anybody's talking about.
Yeah.
It's one thing to do it, to assemble the talent, and then put it in the right places. You have to win Jeremiah Smith in recruiting. You have to bring Will Howard in, who had shown not much of what we'd seen. He'd won a Big 12 championship, but he'd gotten recruited over and basically lost the job at Kansas State. They judiciously used his legs. And then the offensive line is just... I can't explain that. I mean,
yeah.
How many iterations? At least seven.
Yes. That's the number I use.
Yeah. Right. Donovan Jackson becomes a star as...
left tackle.
As Ryan just said, from guard to left tackle. A lot of things had to go right. But there was a lot of talent. It'll go down as a forever team. Maybe not the most talented, but certainly in the discussion what these guys are going to do in the pros.
Yeah, not to discount also Caleb Downs coming from Alabama.
Right.
I know you didn't. This is what, this has been what I've been saying all along this year, though. I'm not sure you're going to get a team like this. Who knows, it may happen next year with somebody. But with the collection of guys who came in, who were key, Quinshon Judkins, right on down the line. The collection of guys who decided, I'm going to return for my fourth year, and they were all really good players. The guys who rose through the roster, and then the new guys, the freshmen, I'm not sure you're going to get a collection like that in modern college football anymore. I mean, what's your thought on that? Is that a shame to a certain extent that, you know, you and I, well, I grew up, when Joe Namath showed up at Alabama, I was a big Alabama fan. I knew he was going to be there. He was going to play 3 years, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, because a freshman couldn't play.
Yeah.
But now you don't have that guarantee, but go ahead.
No, Jack Sawyer came back.
Yeah.
I think Will Howard knew, and Chris Klieman, his Kansas State coach, basically told me, I think Will knew he wasn't ready. He wanted to come back for another year. And I think the number I hear is he was a third to sixth round pick, second day pick, or maybe third day pick in the NFL. So why not give it a shot at a place that is known for developing quarterbacks with a coach who known for developing quarterbacks? Even if they don't win at all, you're a better quarterback for coming to Ohio State under Ryan Day. Seth McLaughlin, who the center who was injured didn't get to play, was reviled at Alabama just for that last snap alone last year in the semifinal, where it may have been Jalen Milroe's fault. It was off center and he dropped it. It was a bad play call, by the way. They ran between the guards.
Absolutely. Plus the right tackle got shoved right into Milroe.
Yeah, right. So I think it's all that.
Just think about it. They won this game without the Remington Award winner.
That's right. The best center.
That's crazy when you think
about it. Best center in the country.
Yeah.
But maybe the best receiver, certainly the best receiver in the country, and one of the best players in the country who had, I keep saying, he's going to play two more years of college football, but he's so good, he has to play two more years of college football. Yeah. I'd love to see him in the NFL right now.
Yeah, so would the NFL.
Yeah.
Hey, where's this thing going? Yeah. That's my last question for you.
Yeah.
Where's this playoff going in terms of, there's been a lot of heat, a lot of, you know, smoke and mirrors thrown out there by the Southeastern Conference. You know, Ohio State and Notre Dame basically conspired to get rid of the Southeastern Conference out of this tournament. You know, this Notre Dame beating Georgia and Ohio State beating Tennessee and then Texas. But is the bickering justified? I mean, what if you could fix it in a nutshell, is there anything wrong with it, number one, except for, I think, guys getting byes in college football? I don't like that. Because every game matters.
Right.
Every game's a game like the game we just watched. But where in your mind is this headed that makes sense?
I think the playoff was a massive success. I've been saying that, and I'm not blowing smoke.
I agree.
The games meant more. The games meant more later in the season. Look at Michigan-Ohio State. It's even bigger, it turns out, than it usually is on a national scale. I thought it was a success. I think you could... You know, Ohio State could write a book on what the last month has been like, because they're the first ones to do it, to play four games and obviously win them all. What was that like? What was the schedule like? Yeah. I think you could write a book like that with Ryan Day.
Did the cold tub warm up? It got you so much.
How do you keep these guys? How do you keep these guys fresh?
Yeah.
And then your second question.
Well,
is,
it's just I'm just talking about the seeding and things like that. Is there something that needs to be adjusted in your opinion?
Oh, I think the seeding is easy. You know, they do something. You know, this wasn't the number eight seeded team. Boise State wasn't the number five seed. I think they can fix that. That's easy. I don't think they're going to do it for next year because there'll be no consensus. They need to be unanimous on that. All nine conferences. So I think now the other thing is, let's not forget. And John Talty and I wrote a big story on this. The Big Ten has always, since the beginning of time, had more money. They had bigger markets. Sometimes better teams. Are they weaponizing that advantage they have now in money? Because at the end of this current deal, media rights deal, the likes of Purdue are going to be making $100 million a year off this media rights deal.
Yeah.
And is the league going to weaponize it to the point that the Big Ten won back-to-back titles for the first time since 65-66? It's the first time since 2005 the SEC hasn't played for a championship in back-to-back years. And for the first time since 1941, the Big Ten has won two outright titles in a row. Minnesota won in 40 and 41. Now, obviously, Michigan, Ohio State have done it. I think that's something to watch. for people that are sick of the SEC or not, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. Well, one last bonus question. Yeah. You always get that from me. Michigan, Ohio State have won back-to-back titles, you know, the Big Two and the Little 16.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But does that have a, for a football traditionalist, does that have a ring to it, meaning that your two biggest brands in the Big Ten have had back-to-back titles?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you understand
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
It'd be like Georgia and Alabama winning back, or,
yeah.
you know, but go ahead.
Yeah, and Oregon won the league.
Yeah.
It was the number one seed
yeah.
in the tournament. The league was top-heavy this year, which is good when you're talking about this, about doing postseason runs. You don't want what the SEC was on Halloween, where every team but two had two losses.
Yeah.
And those teams carried the league till the end and weren't able to get through. There's a big demographic issue here. We're going back years and years and years where the Big Ten from 1952 to 1968 won five national championships. Obviously, Woody was involved there. And I think the number, I already wrote the story, 11 times in those 17 years, the Big Ten had the number two team. So they've had their run, too. Are they going to continue a similar one?
Dennis Dodd, thanks for joining the Tim May Show.
You bet.
Mean to you personally, come into the situation, you see this team face these challenges.
Yeah.
You see this team face these challenges.
You know, I mean, I just noticed from day one that I first met Coach Day that he just has an it factor to him.
Yeah.
The way he leads, the way he innovates. You know, he hired Chip for a reason so he can really focus on being a CEO. So I just was impressed with him from day one. And I think at my opening press conference, I was asked about him, yep. and I said, that guy right there, he knows football. He's smart.
Yeah.
But then to see the chemistry and the culture pieces and the leadership pieces and the togetherness of these guys, again, that speaks to leadership. And so that's what I've just been really, really impressed with.
I was going to say, I've been around for a long time. There are all kinds of coaches of the year kind of situations, but to bring a team back like that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what he did. When he got those guys together after the last game, it was, guys, look, we got to believe in ourselves. Let's leave no doubt. That's been the mantra. Let's maximize our talent. Let's kind of lift the lid off of this thing. And that's what those guys did. But it's led by Coach Day all the way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Timmy.
Yeah, take care, Ross.
Hey, I can do a wrap. How can I do a wrap-up on this incredible run to Ohio State's national championship without bringing in my West Coast course, Northwest Coast correspondent, G. Scott Sr., for another shot?
Man.
Scott Senior, you were there, my man.
Yeah,
you've been on my podcast. I don't know how many times. You know, it's called a show, but let's face it, it's really a podcast. You're in the media business. You're in everything else. Sum this up for me, as a parent looking back on this incredible run. Number one, what jumps out at you most? And we'll talk about the game in a second. But just this run, you and I were talking about before it started. It was probable in a lot of people's minds. You just had to go out and do it. But jumps out most, my man?
It was a pressure relief. That's what jumps out. That's how it felt. I was on a show the other day, and they asked me how it felt. And for those at home or didn't have a chance to get there, I'll tell you what it felt like as a parent. Tim May, you know that feeling you get when you come home after work? And you just, you know, you sit down with that beverage and you relax. Or ladies, when you get home after work and you take your bra off. Now, I know it's a family show, you know what I'm saying? But you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a sense of relaxation, my wife tells me, when that action happened. It's like, huh, right?
Yeah.
That's what it was like, but multiply it by 10.
Yeah,
it was absolutely incredible, and it just felt great. What them boys did, what those young men did, what Coach Day did, what their coaching staff did was incredible.
Yeah,
you start off the quarterfinals by beating Tennessee. You go to the Rose Bowl, and you beat the number one team in Oregon. You go down to Dallas, and you beat them Texas boys. In Dallas.
In a Texas home game.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm with you.
And you finish off with the final in Atlanta to win it all. It's never been done before. The first time a 12-team playoff happens, the Buckeyes win. The first time a 14 playoff happens in 2014, 15, the Buckeyes win. So it is incredible. It's a beautiful thing. And I'm just glad that this is forever. This is number 9. It's forever. It's for the players. It's for the coaches. It's for the fans. Like, you will forever be able to say that the Ohio State Buckeyes are the 2024 national champions.
That's exactly right, G Senior. And the bottom line is, like, at the moment, Ohio State's the only major college football team to win one in the poll era, in the BCS era, in the first 14 college football playoff era, and in the 12-team college football playoff era. That's called trend setting, my man.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, I don't know where we're going with this, but I do want to give some credit. And I don't know if you've talked about this yet. I don't know if some of your experts.
By the way, you're driving. You can go anywhere you want. You're a grown man.
Good. I want to give a shout out to Notre Dame's offensive line. Man, they were good.
Yeah.
They were good. Like, I'll tell you what, them boys were good. It almost feels like that first drive where they were driving, it feels like, I mean, look, Riley Leonard was fantastic, but that drive took a lot out of him in that first drive, so much so that in the rest of the first quarter, second quarter, he could not make a throw. I don't think Riley Leonard got right because of that first drive until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I agree.
I just want to give a shout out to that offensive line. I'd argue that Notre Dame's offensive line was the best that they've seen. They were disciplined. They were strong. They were big. They were getting it done. So I want to give a shout out to Notre Dame's O-line.
Do you feel like, too, though, like you said, that was a 7-minute, 45-second drive. Sure. Do you feel like they kind of spent their powder, you know, to a certain extent, because their whole chance was to get the lead and make it a ball control kind of football game, right, G? And it worked for, you know, but then Ohio State goes on what, about a 7-minute drive itself to get its first touchdown, and it just seemed like it, well, 8-minute drive to get its first touchdown because they only had one possession in the first quarter and carried over in the second. But my point was, it just seemed like, you know, you hit me with your best punch, and now I hit you with my best punch, and look at this, I got some more.
I'm glad you bring that up because it was actually a 9-minute drive by them, 18 plays.
Yeah.
That, you know.
Oh yeah. What did I say? 7 minutes. I meant 9 minutes, 45 seconds.
Nine minutes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you can't teach somebody that 2 minutes, Tim May.
Anyway, yeah, exactly. So
you get to a situation where the Buckeyes get the ball on offense. If the Buckeyes go 3 and out right away, man.
Yeah.
Now the defense is back on the field. And look, any defense, even though the Buckeyes have the number one defense in the country,
yep,
any defense is tired after a 9-minute drive. Your offense goes on the field, gives you 3 good ones, in and out, done, and then you're back on the field again. So that would have been rough.
Yeah, that was huge. That counterpunch was huge by Ohio State. Ohio State scores on what, his first 5 possessions, 4 touchdowns, and a field goal. I mean, crazy, and takes the lead, takes control of the game. And then, of course, Notre Dame, they're playing in the national championship game, you know, not an intersectional, you know, showdown. Of course, they didn't walk off the field and say, okay, we've had it. They came back. G. Scott Sr., father of G. Scott Jr., starting tight end for Ohio State. Were you nervous in the fourth quarter?
Yes. Yeah. I got nervous. As a matter of fact, I'll go ahead and take you through it. I got nervous, and I think Chip Kelly and that offense set up everybody in the world. I think they set up everybody in the world. First down, second down, right? And then when it's time for third down, I was thinking, all right, they're just going to kind of run this and kind of just go ahead and punt, right?
Yeah.
And just let the defense do its thing. The fact, who knew that they was going to Jeremiah Smith with that? The way Jeremiah Smith ran that route, he ran right into the sternum of that DB and just cut out was impressive. But yeah, in that fourth quarter, look, man, in sports, momentum is a real thing.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, momentum is real and you can feel it. And I know you saw, you were there. You can feel that momentum. So in the fourth quarter, there was a bit of time because look, you get that momentum, you have an opportunity. Now, I tell you what, I like to ask Marcus Freeman why he decided to want to kick that field goal.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that one. I think Marcus Freeman is an excellent coach. And by the way, I think Notre Dame, when you start thinking about top teams in the country, this Notre Dame, they're going to be there for a while. We were just talking about this just recently. They are going to be there for a while. But, you know, since I'm driving a car, I want to talk about a dangerous narrative. And I don't want to call it dangerous. I want to call it an ignorant narrative. It's always the, but they had a $20 million roster. And so what ends up happening is okay, look, I know I'm biased. I'm Buckeyes. And I'm, you know, maybe somebody listening to this, you would think that I'm not going to say a bad thing at all about the Buckeyes. Well, I don't plan on it now. But, Tim May, let's talk about this. This idea that all you have to do is pay $20 million and you will get whatever you need, or pay $25 million, that is the wrong thinking. And if you're going to tell the story about the Buckeyes, make sure you tell that the majority of the, like, I think it was 19 of the 22 starters.
Yeah.
19 of the 22 starters were recruited by the Ohio State. The culture was built not by NIL, by the standard of being a Buckeye.
Yep.
So if you think that NIL can just build a culture, you're absolutely wrong. But this narrative of just $20 million, it's just the wrong type of thinking.
Yeah. You know what? You know what's unfortunate? I wonder if Ross Bjork, I meant to ask him this, whether he regrets admitting that. But the great thing, in my opinion, the great thing about admitting what it was, you know, the amount, the general roundabout number was, it just let everybody know it was a new era, man. And I mean, we know, you and I both know, there are probably several other rosters that were built this past year on money more than that, like Oregon, possibly Georgia, several others, Texas. It's just that everybody knows the number for Ohio State. But like you just said, Caleb Downs almost went to Ohio State the first time around. Caleb Downs left Alabama because his head coach suddenly, without warning anybody, decided to retire. I'm talking about Nick Saban. And, of course, Caleb Downs said he really liked the culture at Ohio State during the recruiting process and stuff. That's just an example. And, boom, like you just said, he went, hey, where did I feel the most comfortable? I don't feel that comfortable anymore at Alabama based on what just went down. He went to the place where he felt most comfortable. That was Ohio State. Quinshon, you know, let's face it. Will Howard was a bargain in the transfer wars. I told you, man, when I'm walking down to the field after leaving the elevator, after the Rose Bowl, these two guys from Oregon are walking by and they're griping about things. And one guy says, yeah, we should have ponied up for Cam Ward, meaning there's Dillon Gabriel, led him to 13 undefeated, 13 straight wins. And he wasn't good enough in their eyes. You understand what I'm saying? So the whole thing about money, you lose the real thing here. This football team, and led in great part by your son, got it. I'm not going to say the bad word. Got it stuffed together after that loss to Michigan. That closed door meeting first with Ryan Day and then amongst themselves. They found their soul. They found their spiritual center. In that basically revival meeting, because it revived everybody there, gave them a sense of purpose. And what you saw was an incredibly talented football team get its act together, because they won four straight games against the greatest run of opponents any team has ever faced. They won them by double digits. They won those games by double digits. Stomped Oregon, a team that had beaten them. Stomped Tennessee, the third best team in the Southeastern Conference. beat Texas at Texas by double digits. And then, of course, on Monday night. I mean, gee, when you're sitting there in those stands, can you describe, you know, I know pride comes before the fall, but there's a time to be proud. You had to be proud of what your son did and of what this football team did. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you weren't. I'm sure you were.
No, very, very proud. And I just want to speak as a parent, right?
Yeah. And
it's not always about a national championship game. It could be your child graduating from high school. It can be your child going off to college. It could be your child getting married. You bring your daughter down the aisle. It could be a birth of a grandchild. Your kids have kids. What I'm trying to say is that you are a proud moment, but for some reason, there's a part of you that starts to think about times of adversity. You start to think about times where you did not quit. There is a saying, I don't know if it's necessarily a saying, but it has been said. Everybody has the ability. Listen to what I'm going to say here, because you can take this at home. Everybody has the ability to make a decision to change the world.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Everybody has the ability to make a decision. And what I mean by that is the Buckeyes made a decision after that team up north to have a players-only meeting. Shout out to Coach Ryan Day for sitting in a meeting and having it right there.
Yeah.
Because he could have said, I know what I'm doing. We're going to do it this way. We know more than the players. But yes, that decision that he made, the decision to have that meeting, I truly believe will make a huge difference in the world.
Yeah.
There's a lot of young men that are champions forever.
Yeah.
Appearance fees, national champion. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So being the Raptors, some of you all that are fans, that decision that Ryan Day made probably made a very historic night. Some of you guys were able to share it with your sons, your daughters, your family, to be able to watch that. It's just a joy. So what I mean by a decision, when a decision is made like that, it's beautiful. So to take it back to the game and what I was feeling and feeling proud, I just started to think about all of the decisions that were made. Like my son didn't transfer, yeah, or that other kid that's on the Buckeyes, and every other kid there on the Buckeyes that didn't transfer when it got hard, because we are living in a portal time where you can leave if it gets hard, or you can leave for more money, or you can leave for more playing time. There's always seems to be this yeah, but there is this payoff, man, when it all comes together and they stick together. And I'm just trying to paint the picture for how beautiful that moment was.
Man, absolutely. I'm already on record and even let Ryan Day know that from December the 1st to January 2nd, January 20th, that's the greatest coaching job I've ever seen. And that means he took the brunt of the criticism, you know, even from his players, but of course from the, you know, everywhere, you know, it's coming. But the point was, he didn't lose his focus. He found a new focus. The new focus was, I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to take the criticism. I'm willing to understand. He knew he had an award-winning orchestra sitting in front of him. How do I get it? How do I reach them? How do I get them to play the right notes? You know, sometimes you've got a lot of soloists in your band, right?
Ooh.
And that's what you had to get to. And you had to get what they thought about the piece of music, not what you thought about the piece of music. Yeah. And to me, it is a great sign of coaching when you understand, hey, maybe I didn't hit the right buttons this first 12 games. We didn't hit the right buttons. What are we going to do from here on? Because we're too damn good to go down like this. But then you have the maturity on the other side of guys, older players, like you said, the vast majority of the 20 million was spent on keeping that orchestra together of great players who were already there, who Ohio State recruited, as you pointed out. And he let them, in my opinion, he empowered his orchestra. I mean, he turned ownership. The players also always have to have ownership of a team if it's going to do anything extraordinary. These are grown men, most of these guys. They took ownership, and boom, you saw something extraordinary. I mean, what a symphony. I mean, goodness gracious, my man. Offense, defense, special teams. They didn't miss a note, in my opinion, those last four concerts. I know I'm carrying that analogy all the way out to the string end of it. But that's what I feel about, man. When you saw everybody playing together, wow, it was extraordinary. Maybe I'm too
obtuse. So basically, how long you been doing this? 40-some years?
I've been a sports writer for 51.
51? How long you been covering the Buckeyes?
41.
That's right. Years. So you've been covering 41 years. And one, two, three. There's been three championships that you've got to see.
All different.
All different. Does it feel good, man?
Yeah, it feels really good, man. You know, might be my last concert, if you know what I'm talking about. But it was so cool to see a team with that much promise, that many solo acts in it that could go elsewhere and be solo acts and could have been extraordinary any place they wanted to go, even in the NFL. Many of those guys could already be playing in the NFL right now. But for one last hurrah, man, they came back and gave quite the tour, quite the concert tour. You agree?
I agree. And let's see. Next season's coming up. So if all you got to do is spend $20 million,
That's a bargain now, buddy.
So I'd argue that every team minimum is going to spend $20 million. So if your coach and that team does not get to the promised land, then what?
Yeah. Then what? They're looking for a new symphony director. Hey, I got to ask you one last question before you get out of here, G. I've been asking other people this. Other than your son, you got to take your son out of the equation now. I know it's hard to do.
Yeah.
Who was the player that when you look back on this game, when you look back on this team, those last four games, especially, who was the linchpin?
Who? Will Howard.
Yeah.
It's not even Will Howard.
Yeah.
I mean,
you got to have that guy, right?
Will Howard is that guy.
Yeah.
For Will Howard to get there in January of 2024, and here we are 1 year later, and the respect and the admiration that his teammates have for him. And by the way, I just want to tell you something. It's not easy to attain. Are you kidding me?
No.
Them Buckeyes, those dudes are real. Now, and it's not about the type of talent you have. Do you have the work ethic? Do you and will you buy in? The way Will Howard has progressed, February, March, April, and let's be real. If any of you all said, if you went to a practice and you saw Will Howard throw it in April, March of last year, tell the truth now, that dude was, it was like, right?
Oh, yeah.
You see the Will Howard today? You see the Will Howard starting from December 1st until January 20th?
Yeah.
Will Howard, man.
Yeah. Gotcha. Gee, we're going to be talking more, as you well know, because you and I are friends for life. But I really, really appreciate you coming on and giving that inside perspective. I call it inside perspective. You got a son, you know, on the team. I just can't imagine the joy you're feeling right now for your son. Because your son stuck around, like you said, and he became a very huge factor in the coming around of the 2024-2025 Ohio State Buckeyes and their national championship run. Played a huge role in that. And just because you don't lead the team in catches doesn't mean you don't lead the team in input. And you've got to be really proud of the way he conducted himself and this team did. Am I right?
Yes, sir. Very proud and really appreciate coming on with you, man. And Hey, man. Hey, Tim May, I hope you got room for me to still come on.
Oh, because, I do,
you know,
man.
When I do come on, you give, you know,
yeah.
I am the dad of a national champion.
He's got credentials now, ladies and gentlemen. He has credentials. Now, hey,
Tim May. Appreciate you, brother.
G. Scott Sr., man. Appreciate you. Thanks for joining me again.
All right. Go Bucks.
Well, as I promised in the opening, yet another guest star on the Tim May Show, host Ohio State winning the national championship in Atlanta. Bill Bender of the Sporting News. Bill Bender of the Sporting News. And frequently a guest on the Tim May Show and a resident of Pickerington, lifeblood program for the Ohio State University football team. Bill Bender, welcome back to the Tim May Show.
Hey, Tim. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
And you know why I've got you on, man. I want you to summarize what we just saw in a postseason format, what we just saw in the first extended college football playoff 12-team tournament. Ohio State held sway, won four straight games, unprecedented streak in major college football history. Ohio State coming from the gloom and doom of the loss to Michigan to win it all, playing like we thought it would all year, playing like we thought it would all year in four straight games, winning by double figures, right on down the line, everything else. But what did we just witness from a tournament standpoint? Did it meet your expectations, exceed them? What did we see?
Well, I think, you know, obviously Ohio State went on a four-game rampage through the playoff. They certainly earned it. I think they set the standard for this new era. You know, when I look at national champions, I kind of group them by, okay, pre-BCS, then BCS champions and four-team playoff champions, which Ohio State obviously sets the standard for that to start, and then the other 10 teams were judged by them. And here we go with this. You know, I think not too many people outside the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, myself included, thought that they would win a national championship after what happened on November 30th, but it turned out to be the ultimate redemption story for the Buckeyes, and it was lived out at Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Monday with an impressive season-ending performance led by Will Howard, quite frankly. He played awesome. 17 to 21, two touchdowns. Ball barely hit the turf. Was it 13 in a row? Amazing performance.
Yep. And it was a crazy performance. And here's the thing. This was my thought coming out of the Michigan game. I still knew this team had it in them if they could find it, you know, to be that dominant team. And we didn't see them be that dominant team but a few times before that in this season. And they put A and B together and came up with C, which stands the first letter in championship. So, you know, I keep asking people this. I'm going to ask you this, Bill. So where does this team rank? Because everybody keeps asking me that. I need help on my answer. Because in a regular season category, it was an average football team from the standpoint. It went 10-2 and whoop-de-doo, right? Didn't get to go to the Big Ten championship a game. Lost to its arch rival again. But then in the postseason, in the playoff, an unprecedented four-game gauntlet you had to run to get to the playoff. It was by far the best team in the country. So I think you have to explain this team in two steps, don't you, for want of another term.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to for me to do that because I think the context is, okay, are they better than Ohio State's 2002 national championship team with Jim Tressel? I don't know. I know that team finished undefeated, didn't have to go through a four-game playoff, but also beat one of the best teams possible at the end of the road in Miami.
And had some of the craziest games you've ever seen to survive and move on.
Yeah, a lot of one-score games. And, you know, Holy Buckeye, the Michigan game was close, all those
things. Illinois.
Yeah, is it better than 14 when a team that lost to Virginia Tech early in the season, then loses JT Barrett at the end of the year and ends up going on a heck of a run with Cardale Jones? I don't know. I think one of the things we'll judge this team, and Ryan Day was talking about that afterward, one of the things that history will judge them by is I think they're going to have a ton of NFL players off this roster. I mean, 40, 35, 40, probably. I mean, the entire defense, when all is said and done, is going to play in the NFL. So
they're going to get a shot, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to have possibly a record number of NFL players in the draft this year. And then that's not counting like Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs and, you know, Julian Say and whoever, you know, as we get into these guys' future. So an NFL roster on this team, and they played like the best team in the country on Monday night. Where do they rank? I don't know. Ask me like in 3 or 4 years when we've seen a couple of these other teams, what their records are as they go through the 4-team gauntlet.
Yeah.
Or the 12-team gauntlet.
Exactly. I just think it's kind of folly to rank one championship team from another. Like I always tell everybody, maybe the greatest Ohio State defense in history was the 1973 team, right? And it didn't win a national championship. It had the tie with Michigan, but played in the Rose Bowl. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know how you rank from one era to the next, even from one year to the next, because these college football teams change so much, and then the parameters on how you should judge them change. I mean, there's no doubt that in the postseason, Ohio State was the best team in the country. Just look at the schedule it ran: Tennessee, Oregon, the Big Ten champion, and then of course beating Texas, the SEC runner-up, which lost to Georgia in overtime before Ohio State got to Notre Dame, the independent, you know, the proud independent, and really, you know, basically control that game except for like basically about 15 minutes in the midst of the second half. So I don't know how you rate that compared to the 1968 team, which only played 10 games, you know, won the Rose Bowl. You know, they don't compare in a lot of respects, a 10-game season and an unprecedented 16-game season. Only two teams now played a 16-game season, Ohio State and Notre Dame. So let me ask you this, though. I everybody's doing all kinds of little podcasts. I've been asked different things about different aspects. In my opinion, the guy who really, really made a name for himself in this postseason run, and you touched on it a minute ago, was Will Howard. I mean, at the beginning of the year, was he spectacular? Not really, at least against better opponents, but he was pretty damn good. But I'm telling you, he was the best quarterback in the college football playoff for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, the four-game playoff, it was just the accuracy. You know, 24-29 against Tennessee, 17-26 against Oregon, 24-33 against Texas, and then 17-21 against Notre Dame. And 8 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. One of those interceptions you could have said was not an interception. You know, the one against Tennessee where the guy rolled off the back of the end zone.
Yeah.
So he was lights out. And I think that really set the tone Monday. Notre Dame didn't get pressure on him. The offensive line blocked well. He got the ball out on time. Now, some people might say, well, he's throwing to NFL receivers. Well, that probably bodes well for the next level then. You know, if he gets a shot. There was a couple Mac Jones comparisons out there. I'm not buying that because I think Will Howard's a little more mobile than Mac Jones. And he will get a shot at the next level. I'm not sure he will be a first-round pick, but he may be a day-two guy that, you know, in the right situation, sometimes you want to be a day-two guy because you land in the right spot. So I think he, as far as guys that elevated their stock for the college football playoff, he would probably be number one, you know, because of this 4-game run and what he was able to accomplish.
Yeah. And legitimately, you know, I mean, he didn't just elevate based on, you know, just some whiz bang performance in one game. It was 4 straight games of great pressure, et cetera. And he stepped up. I mean, I'm quite impressed by what the quarterback he became over the course of the year, based on probably where he was this time a year ago when he first showed up at Ohio State and before he'd ever even met Chip Kelly, right? Chip Kelly didn't come around till February of last year. And the way those two ended up working together from a yin-yang aspect of things, especially in the playoff, I think was obvious to everybody. Will Howard looked quite comfortable running the plays that Chip Kelly was calling. Last thing, you have your finger on the pulse of what's going on around college football. What did Ryan Day come from and get to over the span of 6 weeks in the postseason?
That's a loaded question, Tim. Like it's, I don't think it's measurable what he did in the last, you know, he won. Let's start with what happens Monday night. He joins the national championship coach fraternity. And of active coaches, there's only 3.
Yeah.
It's Kirby, it's Dabo, and it's Ryan Day. Kirby and Dabo with two each. And think about how long it took Kirby to get to that mountain.
Yep.
And Dabo's a little different. I don't think you can compare the Clemson and Ohio State programs. I think Clemson, what he did there is pretty remarkable.
Yes.
And maintaining it's been the hard part for him over the last few years. So for Ryan Day to win that national title is huge. He joins a fraternity that includes Urban Meyer and Jim Tressel. I got to talk to Jim Tressel on the field. That was pretty cool.
Yep.
You saw Urban doing TV and kind of looking on. And Urban and Tressel had one each. And it's interesting, something you said earlier, I've been thinking about. There are, you and I could come up with a list of a dozen Ohio State teams that didn't win it and were capable of winning it, especially in this format. Where you're in the 12-team format, we would have said, man, that 95 team probably wins in a 12-team playoff. Man, that 2015 team, they only had the Michigan State loss. They may have won that year.
Yep.
You can go on and on. You probably got five more you could tell me.
2015. I mean,
yeah.
You may have just said that, but 2015, that was a better team, in my opinion, in 2014. But late loss to Michigan State, and there you go, right?
Right.
Yeah, you can name a dozen Ohio State teams, like you're saying, that could have been in there. But I wanted to ask you this. From your vantage point, you know, and you were asking questions just like I was and everybody else was after the game, what do you think came right about this Ohio State football team? What do you think, besides the fact of it running the gauntlet of four huge wins in the postseason, the first team to ever win the Rose Bowl and the Cotton Bowl in the same postseason? crazy, right, when you think about it? What do you think came right about this team at the right time?
Well, the defense was always there. I don't think the defense came right. I just think Jack Sawyer and JT Tuiomolau got hot off the edge. You know, they were getting more sacks. The defense was the same throughout the playoff as it was. You know, it was even good on November 30th. I think the offense played with a little more aggression. How about that touchdown to Jeremiah Smith in the first quarter?
Yeah.
Where, you know, the play design on that. That was, I think, Chip Kelly and Ryan Day just figured out that, hey, we don't have to please anybody. We just got to go out and play with the guys we have.
Yep.
And when you have three NFL receivers and two NFL running backs and an NFL quarterback and a decent, you know, an offensive line that figured out who they were after the injuries, just go out and play. And that's what they did. I was most impressed, Tim, that they came out against Notre Dame, scored on the first three drives, first four drives, technically, first five drives, if you count a field goal.
Yeah.
So 31 points in five drives against a very good Notre Dame defense that didn't have any answer for them.
Yeah. Last thing. Both teams had one possession in the first quarter, and Ohio State hadn't even finished its possession, first possession, by the end of the first quarter. I think both teams had three possessions total in the first half. Is that the kind of football we want to see? I mean, what's your take on the kind of football we saw in this 2024/2025 season? Has it gone a little overboard with speeding things up when, in fact, the three-minute TV timeouts, you know, basically skewer that? But is that the kind of football we want to see? What's your take, Bill?
Well, I was okay with the first quarter. I mean, I'm okay with if you can control the clock and in these roles. I like those changes. I don't know. And I know they had to catch up on commercials and they're going to do it anyway, but
right.
I didn't mind that. You know, Notre Dame was playing keep away and I think they knew they had to play keep away because they wanted to limit Ohio State's possessions. But you also knew that Riley Leonard had nine carries on the first drive and that wasn't sustainable. And eventually Ohio State was going to make them pass a little bit. And it almost worked in reverse. You know, after that first drive, Buckeye defense tightened up.
Yeah.
They built a 31-7 lead. Riley Leonard made a couple plays in the passing game. But no, I mean, as far as the timing of the game, I'm in favor of that game ended. I believe it was around 3 hours and 17 minutes. I'm good with that. We don't need 4-hour college football games. That's just me. But, you know, some people might not be in favor of that, but I think we can figure out who's going to win the football game in 3.5 hours.
Gotcha. My last question. You know, that I said the other one was my last question, but you always know I have one more.
Right.
If you could change one thing about college football right now in terms of the postseason, Would you change anything? And if you would, what would it be?
Oh, just a couple tweaks. I would seed these teams properly. I think by that, I mean, we talked about that. I would go by your playoff rankings. Or the playoff rankings 1 to 12, Ohio State would have been seeded higher. You maybe get that Oregon matchup later in the playoff. I think you could do the first two rounds on campus. If you don't want to, that's fine. That's a minor one. I would compress the calendar a little bit. I mean, 7 weeks in the playoff. Although, I think these coaches would argue that this is fine because it allows guys to get healthy.
Yeah.
And for Ohio State, it worked out. You got some running backs a little healthier. Even for Notre Dame, Jeremiah Love had 10 extra days to get ready for the title game, although Ohio State clamped him down pretty good. And then, but that's what I would do. I just think from a interest standpoint, I know the ratings were good. I just, the more you go head to head with the NFL, it's tough. So bump it up a little bit. But other than that, I've been saying all day and all yesterday, Tim, that the 12 team allowed us to tell some different stories. It allowed us to talk about Arizona State and Boise State and, you know, to a certain extent, Notre Dame getting to the title. And yeah, did the Blue Bloods get to the final? Yeah. But this Ohio State team was super talented. And I think they set a standard of what you're going to have to do to win in this format is have the competitive, you know, heard Ryan Day talk about competitive stamina and competitive depth. And this Buckeye team certainly had that.
Yeah. And the other thing to ponder also is if it had been a 14 playoff, neither one of the two finalists would have been in it.
No,
which is crazy.
Right. Well, not really, right? I mean, you know, and that's what is the game changer.
Well, maybe Notre Dame would have sneaked in. Who knows? Go ahead.
But I maybe not, you know, and that Northern Illinois loss may have doomed their season.
Correct.
So this is the new part of it where, so some people might say, well, then that Michigan game didn't mean anything. Well, it, two ways it did. It served as the catalyst in some ways for Ohio State. And the other end of it, I was thinking about this today, is like, imagine the excitement around a Michigan-Ohio State playoff game.
Yeah.
If we ever get one. And we might get one. You know, we might get one next year. You never know.
And
I think it does, without question, change that regular season game's meaning. Because it's never – now it's not – winner takes all or nothing. But Tim, I was also thinking about this. We may have gotten spoiled by that last three or four with Harbaugh and Ohio State, where it was like, and to the 10-year war to some extent, where every year it was like Big Ten champion comes out of this game.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that way. And Ohio State proved that you don't necessarily have to win that game. Now it's a special case, but I don't know how often that would happen. But in this case, it's not so bad.
All I got to say is, Bill, a new day has dawned in college football. And, you know, you can take that double meaning, Ryan Day in the new era. And Ohio State was the first one to figure it out and conquer it, you know, despite its travails of the regular season. It was a tremendous run by Ohio State. Agreed with that, right?
Yeah, and we got, like I said, I got to tell some cool stories. You know, the Pickerington angle with Jack Sawyer. I mean, he'll be... When we think about this game 20 years from now and this run, you're going to still picture Jack Sawyer running that ball in the Cotton Bowl.
Yes.
Texas, and how he represents Pickerington, and I've told that story in here a few times, and how I had a chance to sit in the wild and crazy Atlanta airport yesterday next to the Stiles family, who, you know, their boys, Sonny and Lorenzo, not too bad. Lorenzo Sr. being a former Buckeye, and he still looks like he can run through somebody. He looks very good, and Laverna was very happy, and it was cool to see them in that moment. And, you know, I think those are the stories I'll remember. Is, you know, was the atmosphere awesome? Absolutely. Was it too cold in Atlanta for January? Absolutely. I'll remember that. Like, going out of my hotel room, like why is the weather bad down here? But
did somebody leave the doors open to the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and there was a wind through there when we were trying to do our post-game stuff? Yes.
It was cold.
It was cold. It wasn't chilly. It was cold.
I'm going to remember that. And then, you know, just the atmosphere around that game and the standard it set. And I know that was the first Ohio State National Championship I've covered. I was not there in 20 or 14. 20, they obviously lost to Alabama, but was not there in 02. And, you know, for you, I believe that would be number
three.
That's awesome, man. And I'm happy for guys like you that cover the sport and get to do that. The guy I'm most happy for, honestly, though, is Ryan Day. know, because you know what he means to this community, what he's probably been through, because you know he wants to beat them so bad. And then for him to turn around and win a national championship, his son plays in the area, his wife is instrumental around this community. I'm very happy. I can say that, you know, I know I'm supposed to be objective, but I can say subjectively, I'm super happy for Ryan Day.
Of course. And you know, go back to one of the guys you just mentioned, Jack Sawyer. Isn't it funny? He's the same guy that you ran into in that restaurant with your son way back when. Remember that? Just a regular guy who likes to have a lot of fun. But boy, when he turns the heat up, he's a special player, right? I mean, it's got to be so cool for your son and other young people who got to know him in the Pickerington community to just see him flourish, right?
Oh, he's a role model here. You know, I told the story after the Texas game. If you scrolled Facebook, you would see picture after picture after picture after picture of Jack Sawyer, like with his arm around a kid around here.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just, you know, my son or, you know, all the kids at a football camp. He's that guy. And you've covered this game long enough to spot who the phonies are.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you could get around a player and then 5 years later, you're like, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. But Jack, it won't surprise me if he plays in the NFL for 10 to 15 years and is the same and wins like a Walter Payton Man of the Year award.
Yes.
I can see it because he's that kind of guy. And he got a lot of attention over the last few weeks and he handled it. You know, I do see him signing autographs or signing a football. And, you know, I got a chance to catch up with him a little bit Saturday and I told him, you know, I was telling him the Facebook thing. He's like, you don't know how much that means to me. And he means it because he comes from a good family, comes from a good community. He had a really good high school football coach, Nate Hillerich. And I'm super proud of him, the Styles boys. I'm, you know, Max LaMonica is a long snapper at Ohio State. Yeah. His dad's the central football coach and got to talk to him for 5 minutes. So I'll remember those stories as well.
Gotcha. Hey, Bill Bender, thanks once again for joining the Tim May Show. It's not the first time, won't be the last time. But, man, you know, I enjoy – our relationship, man. I mean, we kind of see things eye to eye to a certain extent. And I just love it when you're located in Pickerington, but you cover the world. And it means a lot to me for you to be on this show, man. Thanks for joining me again.
Hey, no problem, Tim. Thank you.
Yeah. Matt Wilhelm, as you well know, not just you and I have opinions about Ohio State, but so do millions of other people at this point. Right. And it just shows you, it kind of brings when I did my little list of experts and guys on, it just shows you the impact more than anything else of winning a national championship. Two things involved. Number one, you did it. And then, of course, the next question is, can you do it again? But we'll get to that some other time. I want to ask you this. Do you remember the level of satisfaction you had leaving Arizona State Stadium, Sun Devil Stadium, that night way back in 2003? Do you remember you ever asking yourself, but what does this all mean, Alfie? You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Of course you absolutely do. But in some cases, so soon thereafter that you did something historical, you don't understand how massive of a thing you actually just did. We knew we, you know, in some cases call it, you know, slayed a giant in regards to, you know, breaking the U the way that we broke the U, because they've never really been the same since. But you didn't understand at any juncture, because you're, you know, dumb 22-year-old, you're still like, you're naturally just going, we just did what we were supposed to do, which is go win the next football game. It just happened to be a national championship.
Yeah.
But then soon thereafter, as like the buzz slowly came down, and then because at our point in time, you know, your eligibility was expired, you know, media is reaching out for you, autograph signings. Then it's like you're naturally transitioning, you know, for myself into draft prep and so on. So, but the one thing that I can honestly say, you know, giving myself that I'm, you know, 22 years removed, is like, I still meet people that can tell me exactly where they were, like what they were wearing and who they were with when they watched the 2002 national championship game. Or they can tell me I was there, I sat in section, and they can rattle off the section, the seat number, and the people that they were with. and they just share these moments. And I think that's what's very unique and why this expanded college football playoff is so special, because this run of hosting a home game, against Tennessee, first time ever, and then playing in multiple bowl games and being the champions of those bowl games, and then
Crazy.
moving on to win a national championship. And I think what set up in year one so amazing, and we'd kind of talked about it as a precursor to the actual national championship, was having it be against Notre Dame, like another blue blood historical global brand
Yeah.
of college football. It couldn't have set up any better for the networks. It couldn't have set up any better for the college football playoff. Now, there may be some tweaks in regards to seeding, but at the end of the day, the two best teams that won three football games got to play in the Natty. They survived and they won. And I think, to go back to your point, and this is like about your guests, is like, you got in some cases, G. Scott Sr. and Ross Bjork, you got two proud papas, right? Proud papa of a player and proud papa of a player or of a program,
Yeah.
It with Ross Bjork overseeing, all of athletics and, the trust in Ryan Day, that he was the guy. And then you get two outside perspectives. I know that one lives in Columbus, but they have to be semi-neutral
National. Yeah.
and that they're national guys, and their eyeballs and their heart and their mind just coming back, came back to so good on paper, so great that they're playing this way. And I think, coming out of it, and it's now it's like everybody's saying it, but like, and I think it was Coach Saban that Michigan loss was the smack in the face. It was the wake up call. It was the ice bucket, on you to just like,
Yeah.
what are we like? Almost like, what are we doing? We were sleepwalking, and it woke us up. And I think I think in some cases it woke up the coaches, it woke up the players, and then it goes back to the win or go home mentality of a tournament style breakdown of no bullets left in the gun. Like, we got to go. We got to be aggressive. We got to, like, showcase all these recruits that we get each and every year to our capacity to help us win this thing. And they did it.
There are thousands of major college football players, and I've always, I've been covering sports. I've been a sports writer since I was 19 years old, and
Crazy.
sports editor of the Lufkin News when I was 19 years old. And there's always winners, there's always losers, and it's just the way the winner can hold his head, right? I mean, for the rest of his life after a game of
Yeah.
this magnitude. I mean, I covered one of the great high school football games in history, Lufkin versus John Tyler High School. It was a year after Earl Campbell had left to go to the University of Texas from John Tyler High School in Tyler, Texas. His two twin brothers were playing on that school, on that team. And these two brothers, Elric and Delrick Brown from Lufkin, they imagine two Ted Ginn Juniors. That's the athletic ability these guys had. Super sprinters, super speed guys. My man, there were five Southwest Conference head coaches in the press box at Lufkin Stadium that night. And you understand what I'm saying?
Of
And one
course.
team won. John Tyler won 7-0. It was one, but it was one of the great defensive football games, just football games you've ever seen. And I remember that almost as well as I remember what happened, in Atlanta the other night. And I think it's an honor just to get to that realm where so many people give a damn about the result of your football game. And it's a shame that one team is heralded and the other one becomes almost forgotten, but does it? You know what I mean?
No, 100%. And I think that the with this expanded playoff, I think, and I've heard Joel Klatt mention the construction of the Ohio State roster. Everybody wants to talk about the $20 million or whatever it is, but yet it's not the most in college football. So then, why is
No.
it even talked about, right?
Right.
And I think more so than anything, what Ohio State did, and this is again, I'm kind of stealing Joel Klatt's thunder in regards to this take, is if it's $20 million that was paid towards this roster, 15 of it were paid to guys that were recruited as Buckeyes,
Correct.
and five to go get Will Howard and Caleb Downs and Seth McLaughlin and and Quinshon Jones. And I'm just speculating those numbers, but to fill in those gaps.
Yeah.
And so I think what this year's national championship does for college football is it creates a template that you got to have culture, you've got to have homegrown, you've got to have high school recruits being developed in that program to have a passion, especially for guys that are not from the state that they're playing in, for their university. And then you go fill in the gaps through the portal. Like, you can't just go buy you can't do the Yankees thing. You just can't go buy a national championship. You can't.
Yeah.
College football, they're still teenagers to early 20s. They're not professionals yet. So we can't treat them like that. So I think Ohio State created the template. I think what this does for Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame, to your point about the team that kind of becomes forgotten, is, you know, Notre Dame on the recruiting trail, you know, says, okay, if Ohio State can go win a national championship with that type of talent, we've got to go find that talent and get him in a Notre Dame uniform. Of course, but then you look at the schools, and these schools that are, you know, I'll call it the Blue Bloods plus five, you know, that actually have a legitimate chance to go win a national championship, you know, at the start of the season, they're going to go out and not just go buy a roster to go try to win a national championship, because at some point, character and discipline and fight have evaded them because they're not battle tested. And I think that's what's unique about this group, both spiritually and conceptually, like that they've been together. They actually like each other. There's that brotherhood. It's not just, hey, make fast friends, let's go win a natty. You know, that's easy to say when you interject just Caleb Downs on defense, right? Or, you know, Quinshon Judkins as a second running back. He wasn't the lead guy, right? So it's unique, and I think it gives Notre Dame an opportunity to go, okay, if we want to be back in this spot, this is what we have to look like to go win a natty.
Yeah.
I think, you know, and Texas and Georgia and anybody else that wants to compete for a national championship year in, year out, this template of still recruiting the kids that, you know, that you want to come be developed in your program, and then fill in the gaps via NIL the way that Ohio State did this season.
You know, I told you when I came out of the Rose Bowl and came down the elevator to go down to the field for the last few minutes of the Rose Bowl and then for interviews after the game, these couple of Oregon fans walked by, and I could hear one guy say to the other one, we should have ponied up for Cam Ward, meaning the quarterback who ended up going from Washington State to Miami. And, of course, Dylan Gabriel had come from Oklahoma, where he was a star, to Oregon and led them to, what, 13-0 regular season, number one ranking in the country. But in the national quarterfinals, which was the Rose Bowl, they're blaming him for the loss, you know.
Should've, of course.
And so fans in this new era, some fans are going to have that kind of mentality that you can just go out and buy a guy and he's going to fit. Meanwhile, this is what I wanted to end this on. I wanted to end this on a discussion, you know, Will Howard. Will Howard was not the most sought after quarterback in the transfer portal, but Ryan Day immediately identified something about Will Howard he really liked. Now, Will Howard was not, well, you would not have considered him a great passer based on stats, et cetera, coming from Kansas State. But Ryan, they saw something about this guy. He also saw the fact he had a lot of grit about him, which and he had the running capability to keep drives alive. You know, and there was, if you had a complaint about Kyle McCord, is, you know, his fire just didn't seem to be there on some occasions. That's not knocking him. Some guys are just quiet assassins, right? And in his running ability, he hardly ever tapped that, if at all. And so he went out and got the guy. And then he and Chip Kelly and those Ohio State coaches, you know, you got guys that can work with players now throughout the system. They developed him in the most accurate passer in Ohio State single season history. I mean, on top of all these other qualities he had, what a great young man, you know,
what a great young man
to talk to. What a leader. But then on top of that, he became a great passer. And
correct.
Talk to me about what you saw, because we had some, not doubts about him, but we had critiques about him early in the season on the Tim May Show, if you remember correctly. But man, he developed into the guy.
He did, and I think he was perfect for Ohio State. To go back to a couple of your points, is, you know, this time last year, you know, Will Howard was probably like number four out of four as Ohio State wanted to go get Dylan Gabriel, wanted to go get Cam Ward, wanted to go get, you know, insert
maybe Riley Leonard for that matter.
Maybe Riley Leonard. And then it was, you know, as a consultation prize, you know, getting, you know, Will Howard. But I think, you know, as you saw the fire throughout the season, you saw the fire, of course, throughout the college football playoffs as like almost like, you know, thumbing their teeth at everybody about doubting Ohio State. And I think Ryan Day has developed a chip on him, on his shoulder as well. I think Will Howard, you know, being doubted probably had a chip on his shoulder as well. So they played into each other. And I think this is the perfect situation where you have, instead of inserting quarterback and having quarterback execute said offense, I think this is marrying up Chip Kelly learning about Will Howard and going, well, what does Will Howard do best? What are his best throws? Because we already know we have, you know, some of the best wide receivers in the entire country.
Let me interrupt you. Make sure people understand this. Will Howard was signed by Ohio State before Chip Kelly was hired in mid-February. Right. So I want to make sure people chronologically understand this. Go ahead.
Of course. Of course. But my whole point is there are some times where a coach says, this is our scheme. This is what we're going to run. And right. It does not play to the strengths or the efficiency of a linebacker or a running back or a said quarterback. In this case, it's a quarterback. And I think what you have here is, and it goes, I talked about, you know, Ryan Day being humble and smart to rescind play calling. Chip Kelly may have a whole, you know, binder full of plays that he might have run had he had Will Howard had other traits.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's got dust on it because he took the other half of the binder and then built on the things that Will Howard does well and does them well with the players, you know, at wide receiver, with the offensive line, and constructed this offense. And I think in some cases, you know, it hummed at times throughout the regular season. Other times it didn't.
Yeah.
But I also think in some cases it was a year long work in progress to hit at the right moment. And we saw it hit, you know, three or four times, and it got, yeah. We saw three or four times in the college football playoff when it mattered most that Will Howard was damn near perfect and at his best.
Yeah.
Not turning the football over, which we saw him do against that team up north multiple times, you know, not look confused or disheveled, losing his moxie and savvy. All we got was that on an extremely high level, almost like an upward trajectory throughout those four football playoff games. And like I said, it was as if the governor came off from a playmaking standpoint, as if everybody, that's offensive line, Chip Kelly, quarterback coach, Teddy coach, everybody got super comfortable and just throwed it out there and got real and go, if we just go do this, we can go win this whole thing. And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah. Last thing. What does it do for Ohio State football to have another national championship? I mean, it was a long time between 2002 and 2014. But, you know, under Trussell, they played for two more BCS championships, national championships. Urban Meyer, you know, they didn't get to the college football. Well, the college football playoff first year was when Ohio State won it, when it went to four teams. I think under Urban, they were only in it one other time when they got beat 31-0 in 2016 by Clemson. And so it's not a guarantee you're going to be in it even every year. But what does it, from your vantage point as an alum, as a guy who spilt blood for the Ohio State football program, so to speak, what does it do? We talked about it a while ago a little bit. You know, it's, I was talking with it on a podcast I was doing with Spencer Holbrook. I said, what it does is just when the embers look like they were dying out, it throws gasoline on the fire. Gasoline is a quick burst, but now you got to put more logs on the fire, right, to keep it going.
Absolutely. So, you know, the expectation every year at Ohio State is, you know, double-digit wins, beat Michigan, win the Big Ten, play for a national championship. So what I think this does is because – when you don't, there's an urgency that gets created about, well, next year better, and then you don't, and then, well, the next year better, the next team, the next day they better, because, and then you know, rattle off a dozen names of how talented we are, or else, and, you know, insert what's going to happen, right? That's in some cases, coach gets fired, this guy's going to leave, this guy's going to hit the portal, la, 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 right?
Yeah.
But I think what this does is, and I think, you know, you look at the 2003 team with so many guys coming back, you know, after 2002, and I think, you know, what, losing one game. I mean, I think
DeMarcus Griff.
Yeah, they should have won the Natty, you know, but, you know, lost a couple of games and ended up playing what in a January 1 bowl game that was, you know, mildly irrelevant. Yeah. Not a national championship.
Fiesta Bowl against Kansas State. Yeah.
Correct, but not really relevant, right? Or up to standard. What this does, and I think it's what Ryan Day always talks about playing at Ohio State, is it's national championship or bust. And I think that, you know, all these guys got a taste, got a flavor of what it's like to win a national championship. The urgency of practice, the urgency with the program. And so therefore it's like, I don't want to say, I'm not even going to say repeat, but it's a situation where you have to like be up to a specific standard. Otherwise it's going to be perceived as failure.
Yeah.
I hate to say it. And there's not many schools. There's probably, you know, 5 or 7 schools in the country, you know, maybe actually now probably 3. Like Georgia probably feels like a big failure as a program. That's Kirby Smart and his pundits.
Yeah.
You know, Dalton DeBoer maybe as year one might get a pass at Bama.
Kalen DeBoer, but just call him anything. They're calling him, they're calling him a lot worse than that right now.
Exactly. Right. But so there's probably 4 programs, you know, that are utterly disappointed that they didn't play in or win a national championship.
Yeah.
And now Ohio State's going to have to operate that like that over the next 4 years.
Gotcha. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Matt Wilhelm. I'm Tim May. This is the Tim May Show. And by the way, Matt's got an up-and-coming son, Mason, who is getting more and more attention as the recruiting season builds. I would call him not a late bloomer. It's more of like a late getting his shot plan for one of the great high school programs in the country, Lakewood St. Ed's. Or is it just St. Ed's? It happens to be in Lakewood.
Am
I saying that right?
It is. You are saying it right.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm wishing him good luck, man, as he goes through the recruiting trail and more people wake up not just to what he can bring, but what his dad brings. And believe me, the acorn doesn't fall far from the tree in that one. But
it does not.
You, Matt, it's been such a pleasure, you know, you co-piloting with me through this regular season, the postseason, and the ups and downs of this football team. I want to ask you with one other question, I'm out of here. What is the overriding one memory of one play maybe that will always encapsulate in your mind what this 2024/25 Ohio State National Championship team was all about? I know it was a surprise question.
It's a loaded question. It's a loaded question. I'm going to say I'm actually not going to go just one play. I'm going to go with probably like the Texas goal line stand that ended up with Jack Sawyer, you know, scoop and score.
Yeah.
And I piggybacking on that, it's like the 4 frame pictures of the ball being on the 1 yard line, you know, on social media, and like no points coming from that. So as a silver bullet defensive player, as much as you want to talk about Jeremiah Smith and Will Howard and those 2 amazing backs, you know, the defense and how suffocating it was, and that defense and how stingy it was, and that defense getting down, you know, multiple goal line stands, and even another way, like scoring points, you know, on the other side. So that's what I hang my hat on. And I think at the end of the day, you know, you talk to Mike Doss, you talk to guys from 2002, we wanted to be the guys on the football field that had to get a stop to win the football game, not to give it or to give it back to our offense to go score. And there's a pressure about that. And to see the return of that silver bullet defense with Coach Knowles, that's why I give him the props that I did earlier in the show.
Yeah. You know, I could go a lot of ways because I really love that goal line stand. I really like second down when Caleb Downs comes through the – shoots the gap and forces the running back wide, and Lathan Ransom finishes him off for a 7-yard loss after it was first and goal at the 1. Just the way that set up, everything that followed after that was huge. As I call him, as you know, the sidewinder safeties coming off the rails of the F-16 defense that Jim Knowles built. But I liked the third down, 3rd and 11, drop back. Notre Dame rushed 6 guys on the play. Will Howard stood there with great great cool, and delivered a little, I call it smudge inside fade, fade route to Jeremiah Smith, by far the great freshman of the season in major college football, not just Ohio State. And that kid makes the catch, 56-yard play, which cemented it.
It was the backbreaker.
Correct. My point is, it showed finally the audacity of Ryan Day and the offense, and the audacity of Ryan Day and this football team in its last four games of the season. It encapsulated it. To hell with it. We're going for it.
We're
not just going for it. We're going to throw not a dagger, but a sword right through it.
It was
unbelievable, because my vantage point on that play, they were running right at me, and these press boxes now are in the end zones, you know, at all these big stadiums. But I just could not believe the audacity to call that and then complete it. And the quarterback makes a great throw. The receiver makes a routine catch. And he's a freshman. It just showed you not only what this team had going for it, but what's coming, you know?
Absolutely, Tim. And I think, you know, it has been a pleasure to be with you all season long. It's a joy. I love talking ball, especially about the Buckeyes. And I think, and this is what I'll leave you with as it relates to the play that you're talking about, and I'm just going to put it into former player terms and a competitor's words, is we're just flat out better than you. And we're going to show you. You can bring six. We're going to block you up. We got our guy that we trust to throw it, and we got a guy that can't get covered outside.
Yep.
And I think it goes back to, and I keep referencing it, the governor. You could have got conservative, got maybe run something intermediate, and you know, had a fourth and three and punt it and go play defense. Instead, you know, double middle fingers blazing. You said, we're better than you, and you can't cover our guy.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. We executed, and it all paid off, and it's that shift that we made after getting humbled against that team up north, that happened for four games, culminated it, to your point, in that one play.
Yeah. Leave no doubt was Ryan Day's theme for this season. And on the last play that mattered, they left no doubt that they wanted to go win the national championship, and they did. Ladies and gentlemen, for Matt Wilhelm, I'm Tim May. This is the Tim May Show. Until next time, we will see you then. Cut. Excellent.
Awesome, bro.